So on this episode of The Real World, we're going to be delving into the world of drones, looking at what's happening in the UK drone space, and in particular, what there is to consider from a planning point of view, particularly for local authorities. My guests for today's discussion are Jill Eaton, associate at the award-winning planning consultancy Iceni Projects, and James Berkhamshaw, infrastructure manager at Skyports, industry leaders in landing infrastructure and drone deliveries. Jill has over 20 years of town planning and property experience with central London planning consultancies and planning departments, with a wide range of experience across various sectors, including schemes affecting heritage assets. She is a key member of the Futures and Innovation Group at Iceni. She sits on committees with Crew Network UK and PropFit, and is a member of the Women in PropTech. She also advises clients on schemes relating to telecom installations, on airspace and rooftop developments, and is working on teams in the R&D sector in connection with the advancements of electric vehicle development. James is an infrastructure manager at Skyports, who are the leading owner and operator of landing infrastructure, known as vertiports, for electrical air taxis. Skyports also provide drone delivery through its logistic arm. James is responsible for developing and implementing Skyports' global infrastructure strategy. He works with real estate partners, city authorities, regulators, and passenger vehicle manufacturers to grow Skyport's network of passenger and freight infrastructure. Welcome both of you to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
No, thank you for joining me. So I'll start with you, James. Do you want to start by providing some background on Skyports and their involvement in the UK market?
So Skyports was established in 2017 when the co-founders saw the millions of dollars of investment into the development of electrical air taxis, which are known more formally in the industry as eVTOLs, electrical vertical takeoff landing aircraft. But there was no investment into the landing infrastructure required for vehicles to land. And this landing infrastructure is known as vertiports, which are effectively small airports. However, they're designed to allow a far greater throughput of traffic. They're electrified to provide rapid charging, packed full of technology to highly automate and improve efficiencies, etc. If we fast forward from 2017, when we were founded, we've now seen billions of dollars of investment into the leading vehicle manufacturers, which are now publicly listed companies, and they're on track to certify their vehicles in early 2024. A little bit more about that later, I'm sure. In terms of Skyports, our global HQ is London, where we have a vertiport planning team, we have regulatory teams, airspace teams, technology teams, commercial teams, and we've actually started building out these disciplines across our other offices, where we have teams on the ground in Boston, Los Angeles, Miami, and Singapore. We have active ongoing projects in around 12 cities across the globe. And we have leading partnerships with the leading air taxi manufacturers. This is really important to us, so we can design the landing infrastructure to meet their performance requirements and align with them on their concepts of operations. In terms of the UK, it's a very important market for us. And it is a market that over the last 18 months, we've seen increasing support from government, government level and also from a regulatory perspective. All the OEMs want to be in London. It's a number one launch market for them in Europe. However, it has a number of challenges. London, for example, has some of the most complex airspace in the world. You have five airports all within a very small radius of one another. But things are really changing and picking up. The UK government a couple of years ago launched something called Future Flight Challenge, which is a £250 million innovation fund that's very much backed by government, which sees the leading organisations in the advanced air mobility sector all undertaking very, very advanced R&D in the field, whether that be developing their vehicles, charging infrastructure, developing airspace and concepts of operations. And over the course of the coming years, that programme has now entered a very intensive demonstration and testing phase. We're involved in a major flagship project with Bristol-based OEM air taxi manufacturer Vertical Aerospace, where we're working with them, National Air Traffic Services, who are the UK's air navigation service provider, Cranfield, Atkins, and a number of people where we're effectively writing the concept of operations for electrical air taxis to exist and operate within the UK. Also working closely with the Civil Aviation Authority on a number of projects, and just more generally in the UK, we've made some fantastic progress over the last 4 years, where we've acquired a number of sites in London, and we have a number of sites throughout the UK. And as I say, over the next 12 months, we have very ambitious plans to enter into a very intensive testing and demonstration phase, where we'll be working with some of our vehicle partners on our launch strategy for the UK.
Okay, thank you. That all sounds really exciting. I'll turn to you now, Jill, just to touch on your involvement with drone-related proposals, particularly from a planning perspective.
Yeah, sure. So at Iceni Projects, we're obviously planning consultants, but we come at it with all the individual specialisms within the business as well. So we have transport planners, sustainability experts, engagement specialists, and that's within an overarching futures and innovation team. So we very much look at planning issues from this multifaceted approach. And are interested in what's coming down the tracks, particularly for the real estate industry and what those implications are. So this is clearly an area that that we're very keen to see what the planning issues are going to be looking at how to deal with those planning implications and what the range of issues are and how to break them down and what specific issues to consider. So through hearing what companies such as Skyports are doing, we're really interested in bringing that range of skill sets from the engagement piece, as well as the planning piece, as well as the sustainability angle, to see how we can advise on those planning implications.
Okay, so just staying with you for a moment, Jill, I'm sure our listenership are going to be interested in the planning side of things with our kind of real estate focus. So what is the current status in relation to securing planning permission for drone infrastructure here in the UK?
So there's currently a policy vacuum, and planning policy is a very slow moving beast. So it's going to be really key for local planning authorities to start considering these issues now, and working out if they need to make appointments, to bring in consultants, to start formulating that planning policy, so that as and when planning applications land on officers' desks for these new types of development, they've got a clear indication of the range of issues to consider. So areas such as early engagement, liaising with the key stakeholders, central government departments, and thinking how these matters apply to their specific areas. So, for example, some local authorities might have leading universities, might have hospitals, key business players in the business community. So really sort of applying that national approach to their local areas and seeing what the key planning considerations are going to be specific to their locality and obviously their local community. So a key aspect is going to be starting this dialogue and formulating the planning policy for when those planning applications start coming in.
Okay, thank you, Jill. I mean, James, I don't know if you have any thoughts or want to pick up on anything Jill's just said, but in particular, I'm interested in what kind of timescales we're looking at for drone use to become common for passenger movements.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it sparks a lot of debate in the industry. In terms of timing, these vehicles are flying every single day, and they're accruing hundreds, actually thousands of hours of flight time on the airframes, albeit in a testing environment with various programs throughout the world, ranging from kind of Germany with your Lilliums and Volocopters all the way through to Joby, who are flying in the Mojave Desert, for example. The leading OEMs are very much on track to be certified from early 2024, with entry into commercial service from kind of mid to the end of 2024, early 2025, following an extended period of operational readiness and testing. So that gives you an idea of timelines. By 2027-2028, I think you'll see up to possibly eight vehicle manufacturers who will have certified and will be in you know, permanent commercial services, and they're very much on track to be certified end of 2024, early 2025.
Okay, thank you. So, Jill, we're looking at sort of the next 5 years, all of this starting to really take hold. What's your thoughts on those kind of timescales from a planning perspective?
Yeah, so it's very clear from what James has run through that the various components are really coming together. It's going to be critical for the planning sector to start considering these planning implications. So thinking, what are those key material planning considerations going to be? Recognising the importance of taking a sensible and collaborative approach to understand what the risks are going to be and how those risks are going to need to be mitigated, and therefore how to address this policy vacuum. And it's going to be really key to be on the front foot, so not just being reactive, but actually engaging and maybe being those forward-thinking, innovative local authorities who are taking a lead on these issues and bringing together those relevant parties so that that policy position is from a, you know, a well-founded base, really.
Okay, thank you. So just turning to the vertiports for a moment, and I don't know which one of you wants to kind of pick up on this point, but what are the issues for kind of owners and decision makers when they're considering this kind of infrastructure?
So should I chip in with some planning thoughts? Yeah, sure. So from our perspective, it's going to be really important to get specialist planning advice, because planning permissions needed for operational development as well as material change of use. And currently there aren't specific planning policies directly applicable to vertiports against which planning applications can be assessed, but obviously this is going to change. So it'd be important to assess individual cases to see what's acceptable, how those harms are being mitigated, and to really build the planning case. So considering what the public benefits are, the wider benefits to a particular installation on a particular building, and understanding all the key issues like impacts on residential amenity, safety, noise, disturbance, as well as any other site-specific things. So, for example, if there's loss of car parking on a particular building roof, drilling into those specific matters as well for that location. So that's a kind of really quick high view sort of look at what the planning issues may well be.
So from my perspective, airspace remains a key challenge. We're working closely with National Air Traffic Services, who are the UK's air navigation service provider. And we're doing a lot of work in terms of simulations and looking at how we can implement vertiports into the wider airspace network.
Okay, thank you. And you kind of touched on, Jill, the planning implications and some of the considerations that we need to think about. Is there anything further to sort of say on that one?
Yeah, so as well as taking that sort of more high-level strategic view, we've sort of turned the pages on what the kind of more specific individual matters are likely to be. So, for example, potential material planning considerations are likely to cover aspects such as noise, visual impact, safety will obviously be critical, impact on residential amenity, heritage assets in the locality and the general townscape. What impacts could there be on neighbouring businesses or other businesses in the locality, as well as sustainable transport, how it integrates with areas such as the local transport network, and obviously climate change factors. So that's by no means a complete list, but that's just sort of finger in the air of the range and nature of issues that are going to need to be considered, and how critical it will be to be looking at this at the national level and at the local level, so that councils have a framework within which to consider these applications as and when they come forward, and how to shape policy and get involved by bringing those key stakeholders together. So really taking that collaborative approach and being proactive in terms of policy formulation.
Okay. And so you mentioned earlier local authorities. What should they be looking at already for this infrastructure change?
So from my perspective, I think it's going to be really key for those forward-thinking authorities to be engaging if they aren't already, and many authorities may already have this on their radar, but thinking about things like maybe appointing the local authority to be the main port of contact, getting involved in that formulation of policy, future-proofing to allow for vertiports to be incorporated in key areas within their local authorities, and thinking about how the UK, particularly where there's technological leadership, could be looking at those synergies and how that integrates with sustainable objectives, seeing how it could be energy efficiency improvements, innovative hubs, a whole host of benefits and opportunities that could arise from this form of development. So it's very much about sort of seeing what's happening, make sure there's not a silo over there where this is happening and your local authority doesn't have awareness of it, very much getting on the front foot and potentially getting involved in those workshops or facilitating workshops in your local areas with the key stakeholders, so we can start to see how this regional connectivity can be facilitated for example, for the levelling up agenda or boosting local economies or supporting net zero. There's so many different avenues that could come together in this space. So that's potentially why a leader to an individual authority might be a good way to go on this.
Yeah, James, do you have anything to add on local authorities? They're obviously a key stakeholder for you guys in being successful in your rollout.
Yeah, so my understanding is that, you know, the general LPA has no idea of what a vertiport is, let alone an air taxi. Therefore, you know, that's an industry wide thing, and it's now becoming more common is the topic of advanced air mobility. But having something at a national planning policy framework level would be very, very helpful. So the LPAs have some guidance to look towards. Similarly, also at a building control sort of level, a vertiport isn't recognised when it comes to standards and building control. So they're all kind of considerations we need to look at, particularly around topics such as structural and fire safety, with the intention of a lot of these vertiports being at an elevated level on the top decks of, for example, a multi-storey car park or a transportation hub.
Okay, thank you. And so obviously at Skyports, you're pushing forward with this, you're very positive about the future of this technology, but we've still got a few years until you feel like it's really going to take hold. What are the main things you need to overcome and face in those next few years to make it a success?
Yeah, so already touched on airspace, that's a major challenge, but electrification is a major consideration. Charging these vehicles require rapid charging. They require vast quantities of electricity to charge them, to give them the ranges. Some of these vehicles have ranges to 300 kilometers in distance. When you're bringing in electrification, you also have to consider fire safety. How do you deal with lithium ion fires, particularly at an elevated level? So fire safety, electrification are major challenges in addition to the technology side of things. So how do we develop and scale the technology to allow the vast throughput we need to achieve at these sites in order to bring the price point down as low as possible in terms of our landing fees, so that can be passed on to the end customer, the end user.
Okay, thank you, James. And Jill, do you have any thoughts on those main things that need to be overcome?
Yeah, absolutely. So public perception is going to be really key in issues such as this. So demonstrating acceptability and doing that through technical detail and taking the methodical approach that James has run through. So very much having that high level engagement so we can get specific policies in the National Planning Policy Framework, and doing that grassroots engagement. So, local communities in specific local authority areas are involved in the discussion and the formulation of policy, and very much building up the case by demonstrating how it's acceptable on all these individual technical aspects. So showing that there's adequate mitigation and the scheme and development is acceptable in that regard. So those are the key points I was going to touch on. Thanks.
Okay, brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Real World, the podcast by Davitt Jones-Bold, the Real Estate Law Specialists.